While these artists dramatically depicted the destruction and the slaughter in the temple's end, they paid little attention to what the temple looked like as it still stood. The Jewish generations, in contrast, mourned this moment but always kept the image of the temple and the complexity of its rituals alive in their minds and hearts. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, Episode 94, The Rampage on the Altar. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. We begin today with another artistic depiction of the Roman assault on Jerusalem and the destruction of the temple. This is a creation of the 19th century artist David Roberts. Roberts was of Scottish origin, and in the 1830s he set out for the Middle East, capitalizing on a tremendous British interest in the area and a desire for scenes of it, painting images of both the region as he found it, as well as events from earlier eras, such as the Exodus from Egypt and the destruction of Jerusalem. Roberts' original painting of the Churban, the burning of the temple, has been lost, but one early lithograph of it, now owned by the Yeshiva University Museum, allows us to see what he created. It is a remarkable work, though, as Richard McBee has noted, the placement of Titus's troops across the Kidron Valley at the moment of the assault is implausible. But I would like to emphasize an aspect of it that is often not pronounced upon. Rogers has clearly read and studied aspects of the layout of the larger Temple Mount, including the Antonia Fortress that abutted the northern side of the temple. But his portrayal of the actual temple is entirely inaccurate. It is very small, but if you look carefully, you will see that what he gives us is a building that is profoundly pagan in architectural affect, because it is not the temple, but rather the Pantheon in Rome. Called the Pantheon perhaps because it was dedicated not to a particular pagan divine, but to all of the Roman gods. Upon entering the Pantheon, one would encounter an enormous circular room with statues surrounding the area. So nothing more marked the difference between Rome and Jerusalem than the Jewish insistence that there was only one God who wished to be worshipped and sacrificed to in one specific location. There could be no more different structures in intention than the temple and the Pantheon. And all archaeological evidence we know today indicates that architecturally they were utterly unlike. Interestingly, when we study other depictions of the destruction of Jerusalem, we see that this mistaken motif was not unique to Roberts. And mistakes such as this allow us to contrast the way in which Jews and others remember Jerusalem, and why the destruction of Jerusalem on the 9th and 10th of Av did not bring Judaism itself to an end. We continue our discussion from yesterday, describing how on Tisha B'Av, the 9th of Av, and the 10th of Av, the Romans assaulted the Temple Mount, ultimately setting it alight. As it burned, the Romans turned on the Jews therein, slaughtering all they could. It is this scene that is portrayed by another artist, the Italian Francesco Hayez, in an 1867 work, which we have also sent to you. Hayez gives us a visual imagining of a scene described by Josephus. This is what Josephus describes for us. Quote, "But as for the legions that came running thither, neither any persuasions nor any threatenings could restrain their violence, but each one's own passion was his commander at this time. And as they were crowding into the temple together, many of them were trampled on by one another, while a great number fell among the ruins of the cloisters, which were still hot and smoking, and were destroyed in the same miserable way with those whom they had conquered. And when they were come near the holy house, they made as if they did not so much as hear Caesar's orders to the contrary, but they encouraged those that were before them to set it on fire. As for the seditious, they were in too great distress already to afford their assistance towards quenching the fire. They were everywhere slain and everywhere beaten. And as for a great part of the people, they were weak and without arms, and had their throats cut wherever they were caught." End quote. This is Josephus's account in which the Romans burned the temple against Titus's orders. As we have seen, other historical accounts differ on this matter. And then Josephus adds, quote, "Now round about the altar lay dead bodies heaped one upon another, as at the steps going up to it ran a great quantity of their blood, whither also the dead bodies that were slain above on the altar fell down." End quote. Thus, the terrible image on the altar where Jews would offer their sacrifices. Instead, Romans slaughtered Jews. This is the scene Hayez gives us. Let us study it for a moment. Rather than showing us a panorama of Jerusalem, as Roberts did, we are brought by Hayez into the temple complex itself. The focal point of the scene is the courtyard outside the temple building, the area Jewish tradition calls the Azara. There, the altar could be found. But the painting's depiction of the temple court is utterly mistaken because one of the central laws of the sacrificial service in the Torah is Lo Ta'aleh B'Ma'alot Al Mizbechi. Thou shalt not ascend up to mine altar on steps. Steps are not allowed adjacent to the altar. Only a ramp could be found in the tabernacle, in the first temple, and in the second temple. That is not what Hayez gives us. He gives us steps. Now, of course, the artist was drawing on a version of the translation of Josephus, which appears to reference steps leading up to the altar. But there surely was not anything of the kind. Any priest, including Josephus, would have known that. Whatever the original account of Josephus' text says. Thus, Hayez reveals himself to be entirely ignorant about elemental aspects of temple ritual. Moreover, if you look at the background in the painting, the building there is not the temple. That too seems to be the Pantheon or something like it. Again, we have a 19th century depiction of the destruction of Jerusalem, but with the wrong building. The artist has no true sense of what the temple looks like. All he gets right is the slaughter. And here I do think that the painting may well depict what occurred. And as we study the image, we can read on in Josephus, who tells us what happens next. Quote, "While the holy house was on fire, everything was plundered that came to hand, and 10,000 of those that were caught were slain. Nor was there a commiseration of any age or any reverence of gravity. But children and old men and profane persons and priests were all slain in the same manner, so that this war went round all sorts of men and brought them to destruction, and as well those that made supplication for their lives as those that defended themselves by fighting. The flame was also carried a long way and made an echo, together with the groans of those that were slain. And because this hill was high and the works of the temple were very great, one would have thought the whole city had been on fire. Nor can one imagine anything either greater or more terrible than this noise. For there was at once a shout of the Roman legions, who were marching all together, and a sad clamor of the seditious, who were now surrounded with fire and sword. The people also that were left above were beaten back upon the enemy, and under a great consternation, and made sad moans at the calamity they were under. The multitude also that was in the city joined in this outcry with those that were upon the hill, and besides many of those that were worn away by the famine, and their mouths almost closed. When they saw the fire of the holy house, they exerted their utmost strength, and broke out into groans and outcries again." And Josephus adds, "One would have thought that the hill itself on which the temple stood was seething hot, as full of fire on every part of it, that the blood was larger in quantity than the fire, and those that were slain more in number than those that slew them. For the ground did nowhere appear visible for the dead bodies that lay on it. But the soldiers went over heaps of those bodies as they ran upon such as fled from them." End quote. Thus did this massacre take place amidst the flames. This is part of what we mourn every 9th and 10th of Av. And yet, here too, as we mentioned yesterday, it is precisely in studying depictions of the disaster, one of the greatest disasters in Jewish history, that we can also find the source of inspiration, because we understand from these paintings that these artists misunderstood elemental aspects of the Temple Mount. The temple is made to look like a building in Rome, though it looked nothing like it. Every Jew who has learned about the temple knows it looked nothing like the Pantheon. Every Jew who has studied Torah depictions of the temple service knows that the altar does not have steps. What this means is that while these artists dramatically depicted the destruction and the slaughter and the temple's end, they paid little attention to what the temple looked like as it still stood. The Jewish generations, in contrast, mourned this moment but always kept the image of the temple and the complexity of its rituals alive in their minds and hearts. This is what Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik meant when he once commented in Yiddish that Oy der Churban Beis HaMikdash hat nicht vernichtet das jüdische Volk. If the destruction of the temple did not destroy the Jewish people, it was due to the fact that over the temple, which had been built and preserved in their hearts, over that emotional edifice, over the temple that was akin to that which David had originally dreamt in his heart, over that temple, Habin Vuchanetzar und Titus mit alle Zera Chayolos kin Shlita nisht. Over this edifice, Babylon and Rome with all its armies were utterly impotent. As I often argue, the insight here is that mourning through memory creates reality. Precisely because the temple was mourned, it was never forgotten. Precisely because it was remembered, Jews were able to visit Jerusalem spiritually until they could return to it as a people. The way Jews responded to this tragedy was the key to Jewish endurance and triumph. In other words, if Jews remained existentially linked to the land of Israel and Jerusalem, though dispersed throughout the world, it was because they mourned Jerusalem still. And in mourning for it, they were able to journey in their minds and hearts to the temple itself. We mentioned yesterday how striking it is that Pusa's painting depicting the destruction of the temple in Jerusalem hangs today in the Israel Museum in Jerusalem. Right outside the Israel Museum, one will find the scale model of Second Temple-era Jerusalem. I always loved this model, but did not know its story until I read online about it in a book put out by the Israel Museum. It was the conception of Hans Kroch, a Jewish developer who lived in Germany during the war. His wife was murdered by the Nazis, but he and his children managed to escape. Then in 1948, loss followed loss. Hans Kroch's son, defending Nitzanim in the Negev, died in Israel's War of Independence. Kroch, the owner of the Holy Land Hotel, wanted to honor his son's memory, and so he approached the archaeologist Michael Aviona and suggested that, because the Old City had been lost and Jews could not visit the most sacred parts of Jerusalem, perhaps Jerusalem, as some described it, could be brought by Hans Kroch to the Jews. In other words, Kroch sought to remind the Jewish people, in memory of his own son's sacrifice, of the glory of Jerusalem that once was. He, Hans Kroch, had lost his son, and the Jewish people had lost the Old City. He wished to respond to both losses by giving the Jewish people, in memory of his son, a recreation of the Temple and of Jerusalem. This says so much about how, for the Jews, memory and mourning go hand in hand, as well as how the romance between the Jewish people and Jerusalem preserved and sustained a people. Preserved and sustained. Am Yisrael. A husband loses his wife at Ravensbrück. A father loses his son during the birth of the Jewish state. And yet, rather than reject Jewish history, he seeks to sustain it, remember it, and cherish it. How can we, ladies and gentlemen, do otherwise? From this moment forward in our story, now that we have described the destruction of the temple, we will see how Jews, though exiled from Jerusalem, though bereft of a temple, created a temple within their hearts and always remember Jerusalem. And that is why our story of Jerusalem will end with a return. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow, signing off.